you're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums Was Here Before You Die. For this episode, we'll be talking about John Zorn, Spy versus Spy. In the room, I have Rob.
Hi, buddy.
And on the line, I have Kyle.
Hi.
Spy versus Spy is the music of Ornette Coleman. It is the 1989 album by American composer and saxophonist John Zorn, featuring the composition of Ornette Coleman. The producer was John Zorn. It was released on Nonesuch label, and the genre is avant-garde jazz, free jazz, punk jazz, thrashcore, and I'm going to read from the book Miles Keelock. More of a radical deconstruction of Ornette Coleman's songbook than an in-tradition homage, Spy vs. Spy established John Zorn as a master of unremitting violence. He, like Coleman before him, saw collective rather than autonomous improvisation as the Holy Grail, and with that mission in mind, the alto saxophonist and his crew of hip young New York City collaborators set about shattering the jazz cement to map their very own shape of jazz to come. This is jazz as volcanically shape-shifting gameplay with saxophones trading dissonant blows and separate stereo-channeled shrieks, Zorn on the right, Tim Byrne on the left, over a panoply of dueling drums and a dissonant bass. Annoyingly, tomfoolery intended to alienate jazz purists, possibly. Maybe so, but after imploding bebop's chords running pyrotechnics into the thrash jazz minimalism of Word for Bird, the collective proceeds to genre mash blues, swing, free jazz, and Ornette's infamous harmonic theories into something else altogether. All right, what do we think of John Zorn, Spy versus Spy? Let's hear the hot takes.
I think I love it.
Of course you do, Rob. You
know, it's good for what it is. It's annoying for what it is.
Yeah.
This is the very first record I had to like check my stereo equipment to make sure it wasn't malfunctioning. I was like, what is wrong with the drums? Why does everyone sound like they're playing in a tunnel?
Yeah.
Why is everything irritating me? And I was like, fine, on paper, it sounds great. Blast beats, you know, avant-garde jazz, sure. You know, I'm hardcore. This pisses people off. I'm here for it. It pissed me off. I had plenty. I appreciate it. It's great. Smart, I suppose. It sounds like when you're watching a David Lynch movie and somebody like freaks out and there's like a strobe light and you see them like, you know, their mouth are full of blood and it plays this song. You know, it's just...
Which song is that? Is that Word for Bird or Good Old Days?
Any of the first eight tracks, bro.
I'd say Good Old Days, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's fine. It's great. It's smart. I guess I'm just like a plebe for not getting into this, but when the fuck would I put this on?
Same time as Napalm.
When would I ever listen to this? When would you listen to this, Rob? When you're working out?
No. When I want to clear the bar, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I put this on when I want the most intense music, and specifically not this one, because this is a little high-minded with Ornette Coleman, but Naked City.
Mm-hmm.
Which comes out next year, literally next year, with John Zorn and I and, you know, all those great players. It's intense. It's the most intense thing. You know, it takes the idea of grindcore and just it's jazz version of that. So what it's how fast can you play? Although this one gets a little, you know, heady with the idea of like of the improv aspect of it.
I love that there are two saxophones going and they're panned left and right for solos. I love that it's a it's an actual conversation in stereo going on in the headphones.
I love that.
I love the blast beats. I love everything about this. And I don't think I will ever listen to it again on purpose.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'll show it to people. This is, I mean, this is absolute, like, holy shit, have you heard this? Like, as far as novelty is concerned, good God.
And I know, like, that's a good word for it.
I mean, high-minded as it is, like, this is not everyday toe-tapping music. Like, at no point in time would you sip a cup of coffee and listen to this.
Yeah.
At no point in time would you have your cigarette break and this would be the music that's going on. Like, this is madness.
Yeah.
I could watch this for a little bit live.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
But I don't want to sit at home. I don't want to drive around listening to this. I lose my fucking mind.
Yeah.
Stuck in traffic. This comes on. Trying to get somewhere. You're a little behind.
I was actually driving to show houses today with this in my ears.
No, you weren't.
With my no air conditioning ass having car stuck in traffic. And
what? Blah, 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 blah. It sounds like a Paul Anderson movie.
Yeah. I know what madness is. It's funny how little respect was paid to jazz in this book. Mm-hmm. And then we get the jazz's answer to a like subgenre of a subgenre.
Well, okay.
I don't want to say that John Zorn isn't important in his own right.
Yeah, there you go.
This just seems like a... This is a weird one, man.
That's why it's in the book. The reason it's in the book is because John Zorn is the proprietor of avant-garde jazz New York scene. And they're going to put him in somewhere. And so they just had to pick which album, what facility of John Zorn are they going to put in there? And they obviously went... They thought they could do two birds with one stone with this.
You think so?
Yes, because there's no Ornette Coleman in, which was very upsetting to me in 1960s when I was like, where is Shape of Jazz to Come? Which should have been in this book. There's no reason that that album should not be in this book.
Is the Shape of Punk to Come in this book?
No.
Named after the Ornette Coleman album, obviously. Mm. But that Ornette Coleman album... you know, deconstructed jazz, and it took it to a different place. Someone was going to go there, right? Just like someone was going to do what John Zorn is doing here. Ornette Coleman took it to that a different place where harmony, was it harmony, melody, and forget what the third one is. There's three of them. Harmony, melody, and rhythm are equal in their approach. And you can create sounds and you know, the inspiration to do things that have never been done before. Because he was all about, okay, jazz has gone through they've gone through modes, you know, we're doing free jazz, we're doing these different things. Atonal, just completely abstract, things need to be pushed. Like, mm-hmm. Someone has to push this. And he was a genius. He could play Charlie Bird all day, you know, like note for note. But he literally was like, someone has to do this. I'm going to, you know, proceed to the next shape of jazz to come, essentially. And so John Zorn essentially is taking that and saying, all right, let's go through the catalog of Ornette Coleman, the innovator, while also saying, grindcore, I'm looking at Napalm Death. Let's just make, you know, which is looking at how can we take metal to the nth degree.
Yeah.
Ornette Coleman to the nth degree, mash them up. Here it is.
Yeah, it's a real bad two birds with one stone there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I get it. So we get no other John Zorn in this book.
Not that I
hope not.
From looking through, no.
Okay.
I would have, to tell you the truth, I think Naked City's first album probably, Kyle, you would be more receptive to that. It has more of an Mr. Bungle vibe.
I'm not going to lie. You know, the end of this record I liked a lot more in the beginning.
The last four songs?
Yep.
Yeah. They
liked them take it down a whole notch. Bunch more.
They take it down a notch, but the reaction that you're having to these songs are, you know, the purpose of the song. So
I know it's spiking my blood pressure.
Yeah.
I'm 43 years old. I'm getting too old for this shit. I'm sorry. If you had a neighbor, let's say you're living in an apartment and they're blasting this shit, you'd think that they hate you or they're insane. Or they're assholes.
Know. No, I'd go over there and be like, hey, what's up, man?
I mean, when this comes out at 3 a.m., yeah, I would think all of those things. But if I was walking home and they were on their porch drinking some beers and blasting this, I'd absolutely be coming over and be like, sup.
You know, I get it, Rob. Like, I feel like if I was in a certain mindset, maybe I...
It's used for effect.
Yeah,
it
for sure.
It absolutely is.
For sure.
There's no denying that this is used to completely destroy the sense of...
Yeah, no, I mean... Like,
yes, I get it. It's a piece of art. It's...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, as far as, like, it's edgelord art. It 100% is.
It is, like, yes. This is edgelord art.
Bullshit. I like a lot of black metal, and that's also the same fucking thing. Like, just, like, how dark can you get?
How can you push it? Yeah, yeah. How far?
This is my voice.
Like, but... You know, if you can push past some of the bark, like you can get to the nice fur that you can pet, and it's and it makes you feel better. Mm-hmm. I wrote down jazz through a wood chipper.
Yeah, Ben's not on here, but his take on it sounds like someone's fast forwarding a cassette of jazz.
The car I had in high school that like had the like shorted out the tape player by a penny going down into the lighter. Okay. So everything played at basically like 45 RPM. That's absolutely what jazz would have sounded like coming out of that car.
Into you like a train.
Psychedelic first did sound really good out of it. Cover art's pretty cool.
Love cover that. Art's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's Mark Bayer. He was a self-taught artist who also made comics. Best known for his comic Amy and Jordan, which the movie Doom Generation was loosely based on.
It's a dark movie. And that doesn't surprise me.
A reoccurring animated short on MTV's Liquid Television called The Adventures of Thomas and Nardo.
Nice.
It's about a guy, a city inspector who loses his job and a talking house that he hangs out with.
I loved it.
You guys have seen Doom Generation, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Greg Araki, right?
Mm-hmm. Nowhere. I've seen a lot of those movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any standout tracks for you guys on the grindcore side?
No.
Chippy. That's one I loved.
I liked Word for Bird. Good Old Days was good too. It's good music. I did the
are you writing a new journal, Kyle?
I'm checking my notes, bro.
Oh, thank you.
I did get to John Zorn from Why am I?
I only knew the name. I don't think I've actively participated in a willful act of John Zorn.
Really? I've never put on Naked City for you?
I don't believe you have.
Okay. Or the magic stuff or...
Not that I recall.
He started off in 1986. He received like acclaim because he did film scores of Ennio Morricone and The Big Gun Down. Oh. Which he reinterpreted, which are really cool, actually. And then he followed it up by Spillane, which is like a take on Mickey Spillane, noir soundtrack stuff. So he was kind of doing this.
That's cool.
Homage to these different people. And then, of course, this one is like, well, I have to go after the like king of, you know, pushing the boundaries of jazz. And so that's kind of where he got. And then right after is Naked City. And Naked City is a trip. They cut on a dime. You know, it cuts from country to jazz to hardcore, and it has vocals. The vocals are mostly screams. But
is this album in the book?
It's the lead singer of the Boredoms.
Okay. Cool.
No, but I would recommend. Possibly, yeah, maybe the Naked City, the first album, which comes out, I think, in 1990, a year later than this. I would probably put that instead of this. It just has this certain. It has a different vibe. Yeah, and it's not as pretentious. This one's very pretentious by, you know, covering Ornette Coleman.
It sounds a lot like what Zappa was doing.
Absolutely. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, John Zorn and Naked City. I mean, that'll go on to inspire Mike Patton to do all his avant-garde stuff,
I mean, I like all that.
Yeah. And they collaborated, you know, a bunch. And he's just seen as the sort of, what would you say, the darling of the avant jazz scene.
Sophista Edgelord.
Yeah. Alongside his the drummer on here, who's on a lot of his Joey Barron.
Yeah, I was really expecting to see on the wiki, some of these guys were just like weird metalhead long hairs, and they're all just jazz bros.
Oh, but he does, after Naked City, he collaborates with Napalm Death, drummer on Painkiller. Yeah.
Really?
So you might be into Painkiller.
Okay.
Yep.
Not the Judas Priest record?
Not the Judas Priest record.
No, but that is a fantastic record.
Ay caramba.
Can I tell you what Christ Guy thought?
Yeah, let's do it. All right.
He didn't have an actual review of this record, but he had a John Zorn like thoughts on. And he said, "Postmodernism done to a turn, Zorn's highbrow-lowbrow fragmentation made him the most broadly respected avant-garde composer of the 80s, a Philip Glass for our time, such as it is. He epitomized a generation of classical musicians who claim rock and roll as part of their heritage. But actually, it's only a segment of a generation. Nobody ever got smart understanding the hermeticism of classical music. And perhaps because I epitomize a generation of rock and roll fans who don't know shit about classical music and don't especially care to find out, I find him highbrow. The only Zorn I respond viscerally is the Ornette Coleman tribute Spy v Spy. Ornette is hard to frag."
Yeah.
So this is the only this is the only John Zorn that Christ Cow celebrates.
Yeah. I mean, makes sense. Yeah. I will say that those drums are hard to, I do not know why they're recorded in a tunnel, as you mentioned before, Kyle.
That was the first thing I checked. I was like, is something wrong with my equipment? Am I getting two feeds with a delay? What is this?
Yeah.
And then those horns came in on both sides attacking me.
It's strange there's so much air in it.
Although, a weird choice.
Yeah, although I feel like, I mean, after I thought about it a while, I thought, well, it's overlapping. It's trying to meld everything a little bit together. Mm-hmm. It might have sounded, you know, they probably tried it with real dry drums and it sounded like more chaotic. It
sounded like weird chaos. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what is this? A double bass, two alto saxes and drums.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have that like cacophonous echo behind it, like what are you going to fill in the spaces with?
Yeah.
I don't know. Something that sounds good? Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Thoughtful compositions.
These compositions are thoughtful, Kyle.
Yeah.
These Ornette Coleman.
They're very compositions well thought out.
Incredibly well thought out.
The way he works too, John Zorn, is he creates, would you say, these scenes on cards, and then he organizes the cards. So not
like oblique strategies.
Yes, not for Ornette Coleman, because those are obviously compositions. But he would create this. You know, it's like here's a segment, and then it was
just shuffle.
He would put them in a particular order, and then he would, you know, strategize which ones, and then he would have to play it fast enough so that they melded together.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's weird. I was going to say before, I came to Naked City from the 90s film Funny Games by Michael Haneke.
Love Funny Games. Maybe that's why. Maybe.
Naked City is on the soundtrack when that music comes in and it's just thrash metal. That's Naked City.
Maybe that's why I have such a horrible reaction to this.
Yeah.
Because I've seen Michael Haneke's, 97, them looking at the camera and messing with the remote.
That's right.
Yeah.
Making me uncomfortable. See, but that, you know, that's great. That's effective in a film.
Exactly.
I don't want to drive around listening to that. I might hit somebody with a golf club.
All right. We're to it. What do you think, Kyle?
Neutral.
Okay.
Wow.
Good. I'm not going to ever listen to it again, but it's good. It's technically good.
Yeah.
You snobs.
I feel like if I go positive, it's I'm kind of an asshole. I don't know. It's weird.
I'm an asshole. I'll put positive on this. I think everyone should have to listen to this.
Yeah, I guess if we're going by that metric, would I recommend it? No. Mm-mm. I wouldn't just tell someone to unless I knew them intimately.
Yeah, hand me that aux cord. Let me put something on.
Yeah, yeah. Let's put this on at a party. Here we go.
No, like the
Residents and John Zorn.
All like the metal kids I know down here, like after shows, if I'm drunk enough, I'm absolutely gonna be like, dude, have you ever heard John Zorn's Spy versus Spy?
I know you would, Rom.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'll go positive. I mean, I went positive on the Residents, and I don't see a difference necessarily.
Nah, that's just this is another side of the outsider art coin, man.
Although I feel like it's the most insider thing because it's Ornette Coleman and they're, you know, like,
I don't think that's gatekeeping though.
It is. I mean,
it's total gatekeeping.
Going through an entire catalog of Ornette Coleman songs.
I do know that Ornette Coleman listened to this record and said he did not hear a single thing that he had ever written.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It might be the most pretentious album that we've done so far.
This is gatekeeping and gaslighting.
Yeah, there were no Spy versus Spy references.
Yeah,
I know.
There was not a single Alfred E. Newman.
I was hoping somebody would open up a little.
Not a what me worry. Yeah, fuck it. Let's be pretentious. Let's, positive.
Yeah. All right. Next time we'll be talking about the Stone Roses.
Oh, Stone Roses. Snap.
All right,
oh,
thanks,
my
y'all.
God.